Blog Talk Radio.
How you doing tonight, brothers, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. We want you to call in. We really love talking to ourselves, the brothers and I do. But we really would like to talk to you every now and then. The number to call is 215-383-3872. We got a lot to say, but we'd like to hear what you got to say too. Is that right, boys?
Right,
yes,
man.
Sir.
Right. Sure, you're right.
Sure, you're right.
That's right.
Let me see if I can get in my Barry White voice. Sure, you're right. How's that, boy?
No, this is
no.
Show
no.
Show you right. Show you right. Okay.
Show you right. Hey, man, what y'all eat for dinner tonight, man? What y'all eat?
Right.
Eat right now, Robert.
You eating now, Robert? Right now, Joseph?
Yeah, I'm eating right now, man.
You always
eat.
I'm eating lunch.
What you eat, Robert?
Eating that, bub.
I mean a strip.
Hey, man. Go ahead.
And it is good. Strip loin steak and a glass of wine.
Good.
Man, you don't be telling people you drink. You're a preacher's son.
Huh?
You're a preacher's son. You don't want to be saying you drink on the radio.
Thinking of the wine. That's
right. The Lord drink wine.
Huh?
The Lord drink wine. The Lord drink wine.
It wasn't great.
The Lord could
not drink. He didn't drink Ripple or Boone's Farm, but he did drink wine.
There wasn't no Welch's grape juice either.
No, he didn't drink no Mad Dog or no none of that stuff. He drank the good stuff. But man, that
right
sounds good.
That
sounds delicious. That sounds delicious, Joe. That sounds like quite an evening. Now I gotta go find me something to do.
That's good, man. That steak is so tender, boy. Good. That's what it's like.
Who cooked it, though?
I cooked it on the grill. You know, I cook every weekend on the grill.
Okay.
So I cooked it this weekend. I cooked strip loin steaks with some chicken and some salmon.
All right.
I need to give you a clap for that, man.
Curtis, you might have fired over there. Curtis, you eat, man. You might have fired.
Yeah. Cause, see, I'm supposed to be thinking about the ones who are not eating. See, that's where I come in at. You know, the
well,
people out
eat.
There home.
You got to eat.
Cold.
You got to eat, too, though. You got to eat, too.
Yeah. That's right.
The Lord, the only thing I remember the Lord eating in the Bible was the last supper. Did he eat anything else?
Yeah, he ate fish.
Did he eat that fish and bread he made? I mean, you know.
Yeah,
they did
have a fish fry. They had a fish fry with 5,000.
Man, I mean, that was a party, boy.
There were 5,000 men, and that didn't include the women and children, so it was more than that.
I hope they were safe distancing. That's all I'm saying. I hope they had their mask on. That's what I'm talking about.
Hey, Joe, you know, they called it the same men back then. They didn't call it. They didn't break it down.
COVID-19 wasn't there back then. But anyway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they had leprosy, though. They had leprosy. That was worse than, that was just as bad as the COVID. You know, the Joker got the leprosy. Ran him out of town.
Hey, guys, I have one big question,
yeah.
Guys. What does Trump them think this other 80 million people, however many it is, that voted for Biden, what do they think we're going to do if they overturn the election? What do they think is going to happen?
See, that's the thing. See, Trump doesn't think that far.
No, he doesn't.
The only thing he's thinking
think
about
he.
Is he got, he's thinking right now, room. I got 70. What do you got? 73
million?
Huh?
About 74 million. You got about 74 million.
Biden got 81 million. In other words, Biden has 7 million more votes than he got. And like the man said, he's in any other country other than America, you beat somebody by 7 million votes. That's a landslide. But only because
a landslide
we have.
Here.
I mean, but only because we have the Electoral College here, the loss doesn't, the win doesn't seem as great. But in a country where they have a pure democracy, you beat somebody by 7 million votes, you don't put a thumping on their head.
Like George Bush said, you got a drubbing.
You got a drubbing. Is that what George Bush said?
Well, he said that about something that happened to him when he got war.
Oh, that was when Clinton beat him. You know about George
right.
Bush Sr.
Yeah, he said he got a drubbing.
I think old Trump got a drubbing. But I tell you what, though, he went to the Supreme Court. You know, he's been talking about pardoning himself.
Right.
When he went to the Supreme Court, they told him what else he could do with himself.
I think the Supreme Court has stopped answering the phone.
So
I think they stopped answering the phone.
Yeah, that's the first time I ever seen a Supreme Court decision that was only one sentence.
That's true. You know, but you know, when you're dealing with arrogant men who are accustomed to just doing crooked things, they think everything is quid pro quo. So he thinks by appointing all those people that he appointed, he should get anything he asked for.
Exactly right.
And that's what he's running into. He's thinking, you know, because that's what crooks do. You know, crooks,
right,
they don't appoint qualified people. They appoint people who can give them something back. And so or they don't do anything, you know, within the guidelines or rules. He thinks now that he has stacked the Supreme Court, he can lose and go and get these people to overturn the whole election.
Right.
And they're like, no. Let me tell you something. They're like, Trump, you know, we know you're crazy, but you can't be this crazy. We can't do this. So,
it can't be no.
But you know what, guys? Hey,
you did not win.
What Leon said is so important, and I'm surprised that more people don't take stock of this. There is a silent majority of 80 million people just sitting here watching.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Not paying anything.
You might have got $74 million, but it's 80 million of us sitting here waiting on you to get total food, become a total food.
But like I said, Trump does not have the capacity to think beyond that. Only thing he can think about are the people that love him. He can't think about the people that oppose him. He doesn't have the capacity to do that. He can't.
I got 80 million, and I got 74 million for your food, but there was 80 million that didn't vote for you. Think about that.
Yeah, you don't understand. He came in second in a two-man race.
And what he doesn't seem to understand is that he has the biggest loss of an incumbent, probably since, what, 1930? The biggest loss of an incumbent. See, the incumbent has an automatic advantage. You got the whole White House to campaign all year.
Right.
Well, and actually for 4 years. You can campaign for 4 years on taxpayers' money. And it's hard to beat an incumbent of any kind.
Well, you got my
thing. He lost by 7 million votes as an incumbent.
Thing Trump had to win was to do his job. If he had done his job, in a mediocre way, he didn't have to do an outstanding job, but he just had done an average job. You know, just kept the car on the road.
You got to do a bad job to get 70-something million votes and lose. Good God.
Remember Dave Chappelle back in 2016 when Trump won, and he took some heat for this. He said, he gave a little monologue on Saturday Night Live, and he said, look, I'm going to give him a chance. And I think secretly many people are thinking the same way. They said, look, we lost. This don't burn down the country and go out here and don't do nothing crazy. We'll be all right. I think people are thinking that secretly. I mean, I know I was. I was like, well, I hate he won, but let's see what the guy's going to do.
But, Robert, I wasn't even secret about it. I said that the first day he won. I said, well, I don't want Donald Trump to be the president. I'm really disappointed that he won. I said, but he may do a good job. I said, if he puts good people in the right place and let them do the job and he just, you know, set up there
really?
And look presidential. I think we'll be okay. I said, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I said that on day one, but I have been terribly disappointed.
But on day two, you were ready to go drag him out by the ears.
Well, you know, I would say after the first month.
First day was all right. He hadn't done too much crazy the first day.
Right. You know, because when he fired Flynn, you remember when he fired Flynn?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this guy may be okay. You know, he fired Flynn because, you know, Obama had warned him about Flynn, that Flynn was a crook. But I just fired Flynn and circled back around and picked him back up. He just got worse.
Got
the longer he's in office, the worse he got.
He got worse.
And right now I'm afraid of what he might do on the way out. That Joker might try to start a nuclear war. There's no telling what he might do.
But you know what, Joe?
Yeah.
If the White House, and I heard Leon talk about politics on one of the other shows, politics does something to people. Remember George Bush. When George Bush came to the White House, George, the second Bush, he was actually a liberal. He was a liberal Republican.
Yeah.
And I remember when the Israeli troops went into Benin and attacked and were causing all kind of mayhem. And George Bush said, I want Israel to get out without delay. And that seemed like a pretty reasonable thing because Israel was dropping bombs, and, you know, civilians were being killed. But, boy, those Republican hawks got a hold of Bush. Man, by the time. He was saying a different tune within a week. So there are some forces at work. When you get into that White House, there are some forces that we don't see. unfortunately, it takes a strong person. And that's not Trump. It takes a strong person to push back and hold those forces at bay. As a matter of fact, they use Trump, what he called, what is it, the useful idiot. They saying, look, we don't, we don't even have to push. He can just turn him loose. Matter of fact, we don't have to do anything. Just turn him loose.
Yeah. So, you know, I wrote something about how bad your country must be, or you must be in a terrible position when Bush looks like a good guy. And Bush had started looking like a good guy while Trump was in. Now, you know, you got to be low, because Bush, you know, I think the main thing that corrupted Bush was Dick Cheney, you know, because Dick Cheney and Halliburton, you see, they were out just murdering people to get war contracts. I mean, oil and whatever. They would just kill you for that. They had nothing to do with it.
Dick Cheney was running. Dick Cheney was running the Bush administration.
Absolutely. Yep. So it didn't have anything to do with justice or freedom. They were out murdering people to get oil. And Halliburton was right there in the middle of it. Dick Cheney's company.
Yep. So it goes back to what I was saying. That's why you have these people to this day who are not trying to rein in Trump, because he's really doing their dirty work for him. He's doing their dirty work for them, and that's why they don't rein him in, because before they had to push the president. They had to push the president to do this kind of craziness. He's doing it free.
The only thing he's doing that they may not want him to do is he's saying out loud what they normally would say in the back room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He doesn't know how to, you know, polish up that racism. See what they like about Reagan is Reagan can be a racist while he's smiling at you. And then George Daddy Bush came in talking about, kinder and gentler racism.
And so, thousand points of life and stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. But see, Trump came right out of the devil's house, and he did not care. And you know, that could be a good thing. You need to see it, because when you have that type of racist in the White House, sometimes it will create the backlash that's necessary on the black side to do something. Because, see, we're accustomed to the white backlash occurring whenever there's somebody that's halfway doing the right thing, or whenever someone great does something, or if a black person is the first to do this, or if you had President Obama the first to do that. Then you got to get ready for the white backlash that's coming to try to take you all the way back 200 years if you took two steps forward. So now it's time for the black backlash to occur because of Trump's mess.
Hey, Leon.
Yeah, man. Leon.
Can I throw an issue on the table?
Yes, sir. I was. Yeah, man. Please do.
So you guys, I want to put some brain power on this. Last Wednesday, I was not here. I was at the Prince George's Community College, where I'm an adjunct professor, and I was doing a virtual class. My first virtual class. I've been in classes where that were conducted online, but it's the first time I conducted one. And generally, when I do a class, there's 5, 6, 7 people in it, and I get 10 people. Man, I'm spiking the football. Well, this particular class on last Wednesday, I had 21 students, and it was such a unique experience. It was very out of this world. Have those young people, well, there was young people, there was people in their midlife, some about to retire from government, business owners, students about to get their start, but when it was over, it brought home a point to me that I've been studying and ruminating about. Is that one more casualty of this pandemic has been a disproportionate impact on people who have limited means and resources. We have a generation of young black and poor and brown and lower income children are in the process of being damaged for life. I'm telling you, folks. And I know I have some people on this phone who have a very one spot in their heart. I know Curtis, Leon, and I think I even said Brenda over there, people who are in the education system. This impact is so profound, I'm kind of ticked off that more people aren't talking about it. How some of these young people, they don't have access to computers. Some, they don't have the privacy they need to conduct their online studies. Some, their parents don't have the wherewithal, either technological or economic, to help them. And so what we're doing right now, that divide, that economic divide is being increased exponentially right before our eyes. And I could see it in living color in that class. I mean, some people said that they had the nice screen, they had backdrop, they had microphone, Yeti mics in front of them, the ring light. And then I see a single mom over there. I mean, a baby on one knee, kid running in the background on the other. And I'm glad that she was able to get that information, but I could see the struggle. It wasn't even close to being fair.
Wow.
How
Robert,
is this being addressed?
One of the things I talked to my big sister Lily about today was that very issue that's going on in the local system. You know, I speak to some parents about the struggle they have with their kids. You know, because school is tough sitting in there in person. And
yeah.
Then, like you said, those different environments, you're talking about having a child to do virtual learning in those different environments they're coming from. And like I say, some of them just don't even have access to the internet. People assume, and like I said, I was talking to several parents, you assume, or we've been led to believe, because our kids, or that our kids are tech savvy, because they can use a phone.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We've been,
right.
That's naive that we think that way, because the only thing they're doing is playing on their phone. They're not,
right.
they're not going on the internet and doing anything constructive. And that takes a whole new, not only mindset, but a whole new set of tools, actually. You can't just...
And the teachers aren't up to it. The teachers aren't up to it. I hate to say it. The teachers are not up to it. They're really not. They are struggling just like these kids.
Oh, yeah,
and,
man. Then, oh, it's tough, man. So,
yeah, that's a good point,
Rob.
I'm glad you brought that up because... you know, I talk a lot to this brother, Dr. George, Dr. Cosmos George. He has been raising the issue way before there was a COVID-19 of the broadband problems that they have in rural areas of the counties, such as Warren County, so on and so forth. And there are a lot of areas that where, you know, internet access is not a guaranteed factor. And when they were talking about putting more online learning before COVID, that was one of the things that were going on. People talking about putting, you know, basically doing away with textbooks and making everything pretty much online. But they were, again, not taking into consideration where in these rural areas, especially if you're poor and you can't afford to take whatever additional steps it might require to get access to broadband, to get access to the computer, so on and so forth. So we are forgetting a lot as we go through this pandemic, as to, you know, not only do we come into this pandemic with pre-existing health conditions, but we come into it with pre-existing inequities as it pertains to technology. And
I'll tell you guys,
underestimated.
Yeah, I'll tell you guys, one of the things we tried to do through the Holler Center, we were trying to provide hotspots. And we did get some funding from the United Way to provide hotspots to families that requested it. And, of course, we got a few requests. Then the school system started providing hotspots. And there's another issue we ran into when we were providing a hotspot. You know, the hotspots... the mobile hotspots that we're providing can take up to maybe 3 or 4 units at once. And in some cases, we had to go take 2 hotspots in the home because they needed more than that. I'll just put it that way. And the next thing is the location of some of the, you know, in rural areas like this, hot spots don't work well. So there's so many issues out here. There's just so much. Robert, you have a great, a real concern there, brother. It's really something to be concerned about.
Let me put a little more emphasis on it, because what's happening right now, these young people, they're in their formative years, and it's bad enough that you have the economic and the technological issues, but then you compound that with the socialization. And you have like the perfect storm for creating the next wave of really societal. I'm trying to find a gentle term when we talk about people, but people who are going to be really having a very difficult time in society, technological, economic, and then socialization. Because when you go to school, you're doing more than just learning. You're learning how to interact with people. You're learning how to speak. You're learning how you develop social skills, how to deal with adults, how to deal in a crowd, how to really interview for a job. All these things right now are not happening. And we're talking about now going into 2021. And who knows, is it going to go into the summer? And then we have the young people, of course. Then we have some of the folks where it's not even economic, just plain young people who are missing out on starting their careers and trying to get, scholarships for athletics. I think sometimes we get so hung up into the politics. We get hung up into the economics about the stock market and the job numbers and the GNP. That we have to be really watching what's happening in these homes with these young people and how that's going to manifest itself, let's say 3, 4, 5 years down the road. I think America is in for a shock, and then they're not going to like what they're going to see. They're not going to like what they see.
I already dislike it, Robert.
You already dislike it.
Let me throw one more more layer into this thing, and I'll be finished. Of course, from a child development perspective, what happens birth to age 3 can almost determine who will be poor and who will be prosperous.
Amen, brother.
To age 3, because that is when about 90% of the learning is taking place. That's when you're receiving, your ability to comprehend, cognitive thinking, everything is going on during that time. And we're not realizing probably the impact this is having on, first of all, unfortunately, people have moved away from a society where someone stays home. And so a lot, unfortunately, has been relying on child development outside the home, which of course is not really working out very well. We just have not admitted it yet. And you add that to now you're trying to, like Robert, you were talking about having that parent who has that child on the knee, or that child cannot get into preschool, that parent needs to work, that early childhood development piece also has not been put into this equation as we go forward.
Hey, brothers, we're going to listen to a little something here and take a quick break. We're going to be right back. And when we come back, Curtis, I want you to talk a little bit about this thing you did for LC that we're going to play right quick. Give us a little background on it, because I understand it's picking up traction around the world.
Known for its legendary Hood Seminary, extended LC, Carnegie Library, Livingstone does what is necessary to enhance its precious stones like a lapidary, with the care inexpressible beyond vocabulary, to create a sanctuary beyond the ordinary, school of hospitality, arts and culinary, holistic instruction, that visionary, student health center, and its apothecary, Varick Auditorium, where it seems like a canary, learning may vary, but the efforts never tarry, sweet knowledge from a college like a sweet black cherry, athletes ready to defeat the adversary, Tubman building for the author literary, black history readily beyond February.
Wow.
Now the blueberry is a rare species. The blueberry has no fear of enemies. His intellect is what they respect. When intellect is in effect, we put opponents in check. Since 1879, LC stood the test of father time. Dr. Joseph Price, Bishop J. J.W. Hood paid the price of sacrifice so we could break the chain from the mental plantation, fill our brains with the best education, heal the pain of insane degradation. When we claim education, we can gain liberation. We're a North Carolina like HBCU, historically black with a knack to rival a new. Nothing can hold back the black and blue. Come on, Livingstone, this track is for you. L-O-V-I-N-G-S-T-O-N-E, Livingstone, C-O-L-L-E-G-E. Who you with? Who you with? Let's bring it, like a garment that's fitted. The LC district is closely knitted, so let me be explicit. We are family and I'm happily knitted with it. Instructions are holistic, committed, our spirit is befitted, and we know God did it. Victory in the face of adversity, fervently using faith as necessity. Universally with diversity, a Christian university. God have mercy.
God have mercy. God have mercy, ladies and gentlemen. This is the late Brussels Faria Radio Show. Number to call is 215-383-3872. Right quick, Curtis, what made you do that and what you expect to happen?
Well, you know, sometimes we talk about, as you heard us previously talk about, the adverse effects of COVID-19 and the problems that would come with COVID-19. There are also some positives. And sometimes the positives can allow us a little bit more time to think about what we, well, some of our hobbies or sharpen up a little bit on some things or put a little more time in some of the things that we like to do that we often do not have the opportunity to do. And most people who know me know that I do write. I write poetry. In fact, those skills, I would say if I have any skills, they were sharpened at Livingstone College in Salisbury, North Carolina. In fact, I didn't know I could write poetry until I went to Livingstone College. And then when I went there and, we started doing certain assignments, and I think one time we actually had to write a poem. And when I wrote the poem, it came rather easy, and I've kind of been writing ever since. And also, I was there at the time of the first major rap group hit the fan. We came out first. Most people don't know this. The first rap group was not Sugar Hill Gang, or our first rapper was not Sugar Hill Gang, but it was actually King Tim III. We're not going to even talk about James Brown, how he's basically been rapping all the time. But the actual rapping, King Tim III of Fat Back Band, he came in and did some rap stuff. And then, of course, then came the Sugar Hill Gang, and the rest is history. But I was right there at Livingstone as all this was unfolding. And so, I was also DJing. So started DJing and started writing poetry. And so, with a little bit of time with COVID here at home, and I started thinking about Altamala. In fact, Leon, you were telling me about us getting together, because, we partner in our DJing from time to time. And you were telling about the big Livingstone event that was coming up. And maybe it would be a good time to give the people a rap. And so that is what led me to write about Livingstone College. All those things kind of came together. And hopefully this can bless someone. I tried to put as much information about Livingstone. You hear me running down things about the culinary. You hear me talking about the Hood Seminary. You hear me talking about, the Averick Auditorium, Tubman Building. There's actually a building that's named after Harriet Tubman. And, and I talk about the founders. So I try to give, even if you don't like my rapping, I tried to give as much information as I could to whomever would listen to it. I tried to pack as much information as I could about Livingstone, and that's where we are now.
You did that, man. Congratulations on that, man. I keep playing that. I play it over and over, man. I can't get enough of it. Brother on the line, guys, right quick. Say hello to Daniel right quick, and I'll make a quick announcement. Hey, Daniel, what's up, brother?
Daniel!
Hey, brothers.
Hey, Leon, I had to say something now because you brought Daniel in because I hadn't had the opportunity to say that yet, and I'm sure Daniel would have an announcement that probably would deal with that as well. But Daniel has been our producer, whomever, anytime there is anything to do with music now in our home or anybody that I know in Wadesboro and the surrounding areas, you have to go through Daniel Gatewood. And so Daniel produced, in other words, what Daniel did, he actually helped me to put music. You can have an idea all you want to, but it has to come together. It has to have music. It has to have, you know, the music has to be, you know, timed, and there has to be work put into putting the music and having it timed with the rap, and what kind of music, what kind of beat should go where here. So Daniel had been our expert, and so I try to always make sure I give Daniel credit anytime I do get the opportunity. So I'm glad he's on the radio to talk for himself, but I'm so glad Daniel's here. Yeah.
Talk to us, Daniel. How you doing, brother?
Doing good. Brother Leon, Curtis, I think I heard Robert.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Dan.
He's back in there.
His mouth is right
there. Don't listen. What
do
you
think? I'm doing fine,
I
brother.
Daniel was speaking. I told him you were back there chewing your steak, I did.
Yo, I'm listening.
I think you'll be gone by now.
I'm in the learning mode tonight.
Anyway, I'm
Daniel. How's Daniel? How you doing, bro?
I'm here tonight. I just tuned in. I meant to get here at 7 o'clock, but I had to run back to the house, to the store, and get to pick something up. But I'm here, and I heard Curtis. I picked up on Curtis talking about Livingstone and music.
He did play the song. He just played an excerpt from the song. Did you hear that? When he played the song? He just played a portion of the song. Because he was telling us that it's kind of picking up a little bit. I think someone
talked
to
Leon about it. Trying to tell you that your voice is not clear.
No, his voice is fine. You kind of muffled, but I was going to say, Daniel, also, I saw a post on Facebook. Daniel was launching his studio, Fullness. What is it, Fullness Production, Daniel?
Fullness Media.
Fullness Media. Yeah, man. You gotta tell us about that. What's going on? What are you planning to do?
That's kind of like the new record label. People don't do record labels too much now. They call them media companies, and they pick their genre of music and they promote projects and songs and try to get them distributed digitally and hopefully radio stations start to pick them up now. But you know, media companies, that's more or less the new record label now.
Daniel, are there any genres of music you will not do?
I'm going to be focused on doing gospel rap. I mean, you know, gospel R&B. I meant to say R&B gospel, more or less. But I'm not really going into rap, hardcore rap like you hear.
Right. Thank
these days, that's not my area.
Thank you. Well, I'm just saying because all the music I get now is a problem.
Yeah. I'm hopefully. Y'all know Richard Spencer. You know he likes to pose interesting questions, and he asked me. On my post, actually, he asked me, is gospel selling? And my response was, it will be when I get through with it.
Hey, man, I think that needs a hand clap right there, buddy. That needs a hand clap.
Where's my clap
at?
Hey, brother.
That was powerful, man.
But I went on to say that I'm not, that's not going to be success for me in this venture. You know, for me, success is doing what I enjoy doing and doing what I do best. That's what I'm trying to get at in my life right now. I'm trying to do what I do best. And,
yeah,
you know,
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question, Daddy. How do folks make money? How do you make money in the during music business anymore? Nobody's buying any records. Is it all through advertising and getting impressions? How's money made now?
Digital streams. I mean, there's a few artists that's, you know, people still downloading their music, but it's, you know, it's really high, really well-known artists. But a lot of music is digitally streamed now. About any song that you hear played on the internet, it's getting recorded and it's getting paid for. You know, anytime you have your song reproduced, the code is put in, it's coded, and every time it gets played on the internet or any kind of media, it gets recorded and you get paid for it. Small, and you got to get a lot of streams, though. It's not like you can get 10 streams and make $10. You got to get thousands. I think you have to get 1 million streams on YouTube, like $3,000, over $3,000,
no.
Something like that.
Oh, man, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it.
But people still download music, though. I mean, people still download songs. If it's a song they really like, still download. But the way I'm going, I'm trying to help independent artists. That's my angle, though. I mean, just help different independent artists. And
you know, Daniel, I look at it the way you look at an author. In the old days, you write a book, and you expected that book to pretty much be a revenue source, a standalone revenue source. But now a book is more like it's really like an expensive business card. You use it for branding, for building credibility, for raising your profile. And I think music is kind of leaning in that same direction. You're not really going to make a lot of money on the actual sale of music, but you're hoping it will open other doors for you, like get some type of licensing deal or some type of, movie role or something like that. It's a door opener. And licensing seems to be the way right now that people are making their money. They write, like when you go into YouTube now, you play somebody's music, and you let's say you drop somebody's music on your video and not giving the person right. Well, if they've already registered that music, YouTube is going to remind you, wait a minute, that's somebody else's song. You're not going to get paid for it. They're going to get paid for it.
Right.
And that's you said earlier, the digital world now, it's just a totally different, it's a totally different animal. And to the artist, when you're going into this business, you got to look down the road further than just selling a record or a download. You got to look at where can you leverage this talent that you have. And licensing seems to be a big way right now that a lot of these artists are making their money.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Well, yeah, I'm going to be trying to work with independent artists. You know, everybody's trying to, get their music out, trying to get a video, and that's another, stream I want to focus on.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to some great things out of Fullness Media.
I'm amazed at you guys. Those y'all some talented guys, man. I tell you, man. I'm amazed at it. I gotta run a couple of things by you guys. Daniel, thank you, man, for being the guy you are and this Fullness Media project. I of course have my full blessings and support, whatever I can do. I say that like I can
thank
do
you.
Something, but I feel good saying it. Whatever I can do to make
can
it successful, brother, count me in.
Well, I want to close that section by saying, by Daniel and Curtis collaborating on that Livingstone, that to me was poetry in motion, and it highlights Daniel's talents as a producer, of course, Curtis's talents as an artist and rapper and poet and spoken word artist. It's really just a great collaboration, and I'm glad to see you brothers out there shaking things up.
Amazing, man. It's amazing. Amazing what you guys did. And I understand Livingstone is starting to pay more attention to it, sending it out to their students and stuff like that. It's amazing. So, kudos. Kudos, guys. Kudos. Got a quick announcement to make, right quick. Tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., they will be giving out, they will be having free COVID-19 testing at Ebenezer Baptist Church. Joseph, are you listening?
Yes, sir.
This is being conducted by ACCORD, which is an acronym for the North Carolina Country University's Advanced Center for COVID-Related Disparities. So kudos to North Carolina Central University for coming into the African American communities. I guess my coffee is strong enough. The African American communities to test for COVID. Ladies and gentlemen, it is important to get tested because you don't know who has COVID. And if you don't know whether or not you have it or the person you're talking to has it, it spreads rapidly. Yes, sir.
Let the audience know, to the folks who are the international audience, know where Ebenezer Church is in case somebody's in the area and they want to go past
Absolutely. Ebenezer Baptist Church is at 612 Salisbury Street, Wadesboro, North Carolina. 612 Salisbury Street, Wadesboro, North Carolina. These guys were just in town last Thursday. This diligent they are as far as trying to get this word out or get these things done. They were here last Thursday, and I got my testing done. And 2 days later, I got a text message. Only thing I had to do was put my birth date in, and it revealed the test results, which, thank praise God, were negative. So, guys, it's that simple. Come, get tested. Get tested. Don't be ashamed or afraid to get tested. I'd like to give kudos to Ms. Danny Montgomery, who is pushing, working real hard to make this happen. This will be the fourth time that ACCORD has been, or North Carolina Central University, has been into our community to do free COVID tests. And it's being pushed by Ms. Danny Montgomery. So please give her a big thank you when you see her. She is pushing this thing, making this thing happen. And they're going to be back next Thursday. They're coming back again, guys. Next Thursday at the Burnsville Learning Center up in Burnsville, North Carolina. Burnsville Recreation and Learning Center up in Burnsville, North Carolina. Go get tested. It's pretty much that simple. Yes, sir.
I got a question. I was watching, I was listening to the news a few minutes ago, and we're seeing across the country, and much attention is being placed up in Michigan and other places where we have the anti-maskers, this is like some kind of bizarro land. It's like it's surreal. You have numbers, COVID numbers, taking out people at numbers that, I mean, it's going up. You have hospital and healthcare workers who are maxed to the limit. They're so desperate, they're putting signs up on social media saying, please wear a mask, help us, we're tired. You have this certain part of the population, like, they're pretty much telling the healthcare workers, screw you until I get sick. Basically, that's what they're saying. Because when they get sick, guess where their behind is going to be? Right there in front of that same healthcare worker who was pleading with them to take some type of precaution. This is what happens when you have lack of leadership, when you have racism, when you have ignorance, when you have. It's beyond comprehension. It really is.
You know where they're gonna be, Robert? You know where they're gonna be when they catch. In the way of us who really want need help.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But Robert, Leon, Curtis, Daniel, anybody else listening? Now I have a daughter that's working in the healthcare front line. She said that there are people that actually are coming to the hospital with the COVID-19 virus, and they are still refusing to accept that they have the COVID-19 virus. That's what's making them sick. And they're saying, and they're still saying that it's fake, and that's not why they're sick. And so what we have right now, we have a lot of people that are just stuck on stupid. And the reason that stuck on stupid is because I'm sure all of you all are familiar with trickle-down economics. Right now, what we're dealing, with right now is trickle-down stupidity.
Good. So you be coming up with
Hallelujah.
You be coming up with some stuff, boy. Now, where'd you get that?
That's what I see. I call it as I see it.
I mean, I see these healthcare workers. This really, I mean, certain things just bother me to no end. These people are tired. They haven't gone to bed, some of them. They're risking their lives taking care of people.
Yeah.
And you have people out here saying, I'm not wearing no mask when I go to the Walmart. Let's humor them for a moment. Let's just say, because maybe it is overblown. But is that going to hurt your behind to put a mask on?
But Robert, my wife put this thing in perspective very, very good. My wife retired from working in the operating room after 45 years. And she said when they first, you know, started the mask, asking people to wear masks, she said, I wore a mask every day for 45 years.
Lord, have mercy.
And I said, well, Patricia, I said, why were you all wearing a mask? She said, the reason that we were wearing a mask was because if we had some type of virus or disease, we didn't want to transmit that to the patient. And by the same token, we didn't want them to transmit, whatever viruses or diseases to us. I said, so why is that so complicated for the masses of people to understand? And she said, I don't know.
But I do know why, and I do want to say that something.
Trickle-down stupidity.
Yep.
At the top, it's just a matter of time where it's going to trickle down to the masses, and that's why you see even crazy people like, of course, start with Donald Trump. He's had the COVID. Then, of course, you have Giuliani and Ben Carson, and God bless his soul, Herman Cain died with the virus. And still people are not getting the message that this is a dangerous virus, and, of course, viruses are not new. Viruses have plagued mankind since the beginning of mankind. Matter of fact, archaeologists, anthropologists, scientists, they have looked at evidence where there was another species of mankind that was completely wiped out by a virus. And a lot of people that are looking at ways that could end humankind as we know it. Of course, they named a meteorite hitting the earth, nuclear war, and of course, number three on the list was a pandemic. So why these people are not accepting the reality that we have a serious situation and they should take it serious, the only way I can explain it is trickle-down stupidity.
Curtis, you were getting ready to say
something. Look, I wanted to say something. You know, I talked a little bit about it on a show, previous show, but again, in America, we've underestimated the devastation of cults,
mm-hmm.
cult leadership.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what you're seeing is, and I think it's probably maybe for one of the first times it has been as clear as a cult on the national stage coming from the White House, but you're seeing what cultism does. This is more than Trumpism. This is really cultism. And see, mm-hmm. Like I said, the first thing you know when you know you're in a cult is facts do not matter. Truth do not matter. Even death does not matter.
Mm.
And see, and that's the problem. We saw cultism on display for the masses, probably for maybe one of the first times, at least to this extent. You know, we see it in certain churches. We see it, again, you know, we know Jim Jones, how he had people drinking the Kool-Aid. But people think you have to have physical Kool-Aid poisoning in order to be poisoned. We are being poisoned spiritually, poisoned in a way where you think truth doesn't matter anymore. That's a spiritual poisoning. And so you're seeing wickedness on display. They don't care about you. A cult does not care who dies. You know,
including themselves.
Exactly. So that's why this is going on. You had a cult leader. Trump is a cult leader. He's nothing else. He has no. If he does have an education, it doesn't matter because he doesn't use it. So I don't know what education he could possibly have. But one thing he does have, and we have to give him credit for this, he's a con artist. And a con artist who looks after self will have everybody murdered and don't even give a damn. And so what he's doing is he has what I call predatory ego, an ego that would serve as a predator. He's a predator through his ego. And people see him doing this crazy stuff with his ego, and that like it's okay. You know, he just talks about himself. He just talks about how he did a great job. He doesn't care if he's in a hole in hell. He talks about how good he did. And that should have been a red flag right there. So what I'm saying is we've seen a cult leader that's been empowered with one of the most powerful positions on earth.
And we are Curtis Robert Leon.
A backlash. But
what I find so ironic is you have some people, even though Trump has made it very clear that he's against wearing masks, but you have people that are following Trump that are wearing masks. I said, that's an oxymoron.
Hmm.
How do you follow Trump and wear a mask?
Things don't make sense in a cult, man.
That's right. That's what I'm. Understand. You basically. That's what I'm just saying. You know.
Yeah.
They do things that just don't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
You can't make sense of the things that they do.
Whatever the fool says, that's supposed to be the cult leader. Whatever that fool says, that's what goes. He could have said something totally different a minute before.
Yeah.
But then when the fool turns around and says something else, then that's what goes. The last thing that he said goes. It doesn't matter if it made sense. Doesn't matter if it contradicted what he just said. Doesn't matter if it contradicted the truth, the facts, the history. It does not matter. So we're dealing with a bunch of.
And he says a lot of things. And he says a lot of things that even though it may not resonate with us, or it may not appeal us, or it may not affect us. But just like, for example, when he first came on the national scene, he said that I can shoot someone on Fifth Avenue.
Exactly. Avenue.
And I would not lose any support. Now,
that was
to you,
the cult test.
To us, now that went right over our heads. You follow what I'm saying?
Yep.
But people that were susceptible and people that were listening to that message, basically what that told them was, whatever I do not turn against me.
He had an
against me. It was like hypnosis.
Exactly.
And then
that
later on,
that.
He went out and said, he said this on national television with people listening. And, of course, the people listening to him, they heard it and they followed the order. He said that, do not believe anything but what we say. Do not believe the media. Only believe what we tell you. That was
That's
message.
Right.
That was just like there's a certain amount of people in America that can be hypnotized, and of course, and most of us can't be hypnotized. But for those people that can be hypnotized, when he said that was just like a hypnotic message that they got, and they received, and then they acted on it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I
think. you better run from whatever you're dealing with. If truth does not matter, you better run like hell. Because the only way we could be put in chains and brought in on slave ships is somebody had to sell the notion that we were less than human. People had to lie about us. They had to lie on who we were, where we came from. So when truth does not matter, and Jesus said it very clearly, the truth shall make you free. You can't
right.
be free if you don't know the truth. And Trump,
that's right.
And one of the things that Trump makes very clear, we do not do truth here. We don't believe
right.
in truth. So don't bring it here.
And see, another thing, too, they named the top five places. They named the top five places. That 80% of the cases of the COVID-19 originated in these five places. The top five places where COVID-19 originates are they in balls, restaurants, cafes, hotels, and places of worship. So the top five places where the COVID-19, where super spreaders come from. And I told Patricia on Sunday, I said, I am so glad that we have a minister that's not crazy. Because you have a lot of crazy ministers out here
yeah.
that's still telling people to come to
yeah.
church. And, of course,
yeah.
you know, in churches, you know, people are getting up singing and shouting and
yep.
Testifying and all yep. kind of other things, you know, just
yep.
creating
all
the virus.
Same mic, all using the same mic, all kinds
all
of
them
stuff.
Using the same mic, taking no protocols to yep. prevent spreading that virus. And so,
I'm scared. I'm crazy.
These people are the ones that Jesus talked about.
Yep.
Jesus talked about these people. He talked about the blind leading the blind.
Yep.
He talked about people don't do, you know, watch them of what they do, not what they say.
Mm-hmm.
And brothers,
y'all done talked me out of time, man. You guys have some good conversation, man. I had something I wanted to say tonight. You guys just
but say it.
Up. Here's what I want to say, guys. Transitioning. Now, I just want to say this to the people who have. We had to go through transitioning with who beat Hillary? Trump. So we had to go through a transitioning from President Obama to Trump. So imagine what our minds hit. And Joe, I heard you say this at the beginning of the show. You just succumbed to the idea. Well, maybe he'll be all right. You know. Maybe he'll be all right. So I just want to say this to the people who are going through having problems with this transition they're getting ready to have to go through. And those of us who don't have a problem, it's getting ready to happen. So you really need to just put your mindset on that for your good, for your own good. Do it for your own good. Don't do it for me. Don't do it for Biden. Do it for your own good. Because otherwise you're going to be very frustrated and to have that in you too long is going to be bad for your health.
Mm-hmm.
So just settle down and accept it. Set your mind on that you have to accept it. It's hard. I understand that. Just like any transitioning, there are some adjustments that have to be made. So we have to make our minds ready for this transition. And to my black brothers and sisters out here who are getting ready to go through this transition, just like when President Obama was president, I hear too many of us say Obama didn't do anything for me. Maybe he did, but I'm just going to say this. The policies, you have to pay attention to the policies. You have to pay attention to those things that they are trying to do. And take advantage of the policies that are out there that have been passed. You know what I'm saying? Like one of the things that Trump turned back on that President Obama did that people don't notice was he stopped requiring large companies to report the discrepancies or the disparities in the pay that between black and white. And why do you think he did that? Because he knew it was a problem, not for black, but because it was a problem for the company. He knows that there's a big disparity in that. So those things, like those little small little things that you think were not done for you, you have to just kind of read the small print. A lot of the things that Biden do won't be in big print. They won't say, he won't say, this is for you black folks. So we have to continue to work in our communities, continue to find resources and bring them back into our communities. We cannot expect Biden and Sister Harris to do anything for us at this point. We just have to keep working and take advantage of the things that they are going to do that are going to make it easier for us to do the things we need to do in our community. Trust me. And trust me,
I'm going to say one thing. You know what we are experiencing right now with Donald Trump?
Uh-huh.
What we are experiencing right now with Donald Trump, but Dr. Martin Luther King called fight backlash. One of the things he talked about in his speeches, he said every time he made progress in one area, you know, they'll go out and demonstrate, you know, get rid of segregation on buses and you know, get all type of civil rights bills and things done. He said, even with all the progress that he was making, he said, I always was concerned about the white backlash.
Right.
See, and what we are doing right now, we are experiencing the white backlash from electing a black president.
And you got to believe you just have to be ready for it.
I'm going to take that step further, too. Leon just talked about why Obama maybe looked upon it. He didn't accomplish much. The backlash started on day one of Obama's election. And have you heard of the Tea Party lately? Do you know that the Tea Party was a bunch of racists who worked in directly with politicians to deliberately obstruct the progress of the black president? So,
well, you know, Mitch McConnell is the head of the Senate, supposed to be working for the entire country, but the first thing he said when Obama was elected, his only goal was to make President Obama a one-term president.
Yeah.
That was the only thing he was working towards, was to make Obama a one-term president. He didn't care whether what Obama was saying was good for the country or would take the country to new heights, whether it would help the people in the South, whether it helped the people up in Appalachia that's starving to death. It didn't matter to him. My goal is to make President Obama a one-term president. That's what Mitch McConnell said when he was elected.
Yeah.
That's the head of the Senate.
So I just wanted to say, Leon, when people talk about that, I think what we need to do is, you know, be fair, be objective, because, you know, there were some issues. I had some issues with some of Obama's foreign policy and some of the usage of the drones and that type of thing. I mean, I have to say that. But overall, we do have to take in consideration, whenever you're talking about what he didn't do, we are not looking at the level of racism that he had to deal with that was basically a racism that instituted the highest level of obstruction probably ever in American history as it pertains to a president. They deliberately obstructed his policies and his vision and his work. And for him to get something through almost took a miracle. And at the same time, we need to make sure he gets credit for cleaning up, pulling us out of that economic pit hole that Bush and Cheney drove the nation in. I mean,
if he didn't do anything, any level of racism you have experienced in America, any level of racism you have experienced in America, you can multiply that 1,000 times with President Obama. That's what he experienced.
All right, brothers, we'll have to finish this next week, man. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week. God bless you.
Bye. Good night, everybody.
Good night, brother.
Good night, brother.
Night, good night.
Sing it, OJ. Sing it, OJ.
Come on. Come on.
Be safe out there,
Robert.
What up
there, Leon? Yeah, man, be safe out there, brother. Be careful.
Hey, bro. We take you next
time. Yeah, man.
Later.
Good show. Good show.